Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI prays before the Holy Shroud in Turin, a relic that represents the victory of life over death. On the World Day for Press Freedom, a Vatican official reflects on the motivation that pushes people to communicate, on the beauty and power of ideas circulating and opening up new perspectives, on the importance of means and message, of form and content. And film critic Peter Malone talks about the latest animation film from DreamWorks, which he says should appeal to children of all ages, even if we look like adults. Pope Benedict XVI on Sunday prayed in front of one of Christianity's most important relics, the Holy Shroud, which is on display in Turin Cathedral. The Pope, who undertook a one-day visit to the northern city of Turin, also celebrated Mass there and met with the sick. The shroud is a precious linen cloth, believed to be the burial cloth of Jesus. It is the first time the cloth has gone on public display since the Jubilee year of 2000 and a subsequent restoration in 2002. In his meditation, the Pope said, "The shroud is an icon written in blood, the blood of a flogged man crowned with thorns, crucified and wounded on the right side of his ribs. The image imprinted on the shroud," the Pope added, "is that of a dead man, but the blood speaks of his life." In the morning, the Pope also celebrated a large outdoor mass in St. Charles Square in Turin. Tens of thousands of pilgrims turned out for the ceremony, and to them, the Pope said the image represents the passion of the man of every time and every place, with his sufferings, difficulties, and sins. "If thousands and thousands of people venerate the shroud," he said, "it is because in it they see not only darkness, but also light. Not only the defeat of life and love, but also the victory of life over death." Lydia O'Kane has this report.
Pope Benedict's visit to the northern Italian city of Turin began on Sunday with an open-air mass, followed by a vibrant encounter with the youth of the region. But it was the Holy Father's next stop that was to be the highlight of this visit, his pilgrimage to venerate the Shroud of Turin.
Kyrie eleison.
Once inside the serenity of Turin's cathedral, the Pope sat in a crimson chair from where he delivered a meditation below the unmistakable length of the encased shroud, which is currently on public display. The Holy Father began by thanking God for the gift of this pilgrimage and said that although he had viewed the shroud before, he looked upon this visit with particular significance because this time he was coming as a successor of Peter, and over the years the message of the shroud for him had grown more intense.
Ma questa volta vivo questo pellegrinaggio e questa sosta con particolare intensità.
The Pope's meditation centered around the mystery of Holy Saturday, and he explained that this theme had come to him as a result of this solemn exposition. Pope Benedict said that the shroud can be seen as the icon of Holy Saturday. The shroud, the Pope added, contains the body of a crucified man, and this cloth gives us a representation of the body of Jesus as it lay in the tomb the day after the Sabbath. Holy Saturday, continued Pope Benedict, is the day that God is hidden. On that day on earth, there is great silence and solitude. Great silence because the king sleeps. God is dead in the flesh. Drawing further on this theme, the Holy Father noted that in our time, humanity has become particularly sensitive to the mystery of Holy Saturday, especially after going through the last century. The hiddenness of God, explained the Pope, is part of the spirituality of contemporary man. It is almost unconscious. There is a vacuum at heart that has been widening ever more.
Dopo le due guerre mondiali, i lager e i gulag, Hiroshima e Nagasaki, la nostra epoca è diventata in misura sempre maggiore un sabato santo.
The Holy Father went on to say that after two world wars, concentration camps and the gulag, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, our age has become increasingly a holy Saturday. The darkness of this day challenges all those who wonder about life. It especially challenges us as believers. Yet the death of the Son of God, Pope Benedict said, is the opposite to this. It's totally positive, a source of consolation and hope. Holy Saturday is the no man's land between death and resurrection, but in this land of none enters the one who endured the marks of his passion for man.
Questo è il mistero del sabato santo. Proprio di là, dal buio della morte del Figlio di Dio, è spuntata la luce di una speranza nuova, la luce della risurrezione.
The mystery of Holy Saturday is this, said the Pope. Just beyond the darkness of death of the Son of God, there is the light of a new hope, the light of the resurrection. And here, Pope Benedict said, looking at this sacred sheet with the eyes of faith, I perceive something of this light. After venerating the Shroud of Turin, the Holy Father travelled in his fondly named Popemobile to his final engagement of the day, an encounter with the sick at the nearby Little House of Divine Providence. He told the sick people gathered, following a rousing welcome, that they carry out important work because they live their sufferings in union with the crucified and risen Christ and participate in the mystery of his suffering for the salvation of the world.
Il messaggio di questa solenne ostensione della sindone, Passio Christi, Passio Hominis, qui si comprende in modo particolare.
As he left the little house of divine providence, the Pope blessed the waiting crowd outside before departing for his journey back to the Vatican. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
Thanks there to Lydia O'Kane for that report. World Press Freedom Day is celebrated across the globe every year on May the 3rd. This annual observance represents an opportunity to commemorate the fundamental principles of press freedom and also to pay solemn tribute to journalists who have lost their lives in the line of duty. This year, UNESCO's celebration of World Press Freedom Day highlights the importance of freedom of information as an integral part of freedom of expression and its contribution to democratic governance. Of course, a day such as this provides much food for thought, while highlighting the difficulties and dangers faced by journalists who work in countries where dictators or oppressive governors rule. It also triggers a train of thought regarding the quality of communications and the ever more multifaceted face of communications in this technologically evolving world. How about talking to someone who works in the field of communications in the Vatican, I asked myself. Someone whose concern is, amongst other things, to render some pretty obscure sounding documents into intelligible and interesting reading matter for a wide and varied audience.
Hello, my name is Richard Rouse. I'm an official of the Pontifical Council for Culture. It's a dicastery of the Holy See, which has just opened up a new department, which is looking at the theme of languages and communication.
So you're a good person to speak to on the World Day for Freedom of the Press, which is basically freedom of communication. Do you feel free in your job, Richard? Here in the Vatican, it's a state. You are communicating to the world what the Vatican has to say, or you're looking through the documents they produce, and I assume you are intervening in the English language documents and making them as reader easy as possible, if I'm not mistaken. Do you feel free in your job, or do you feel you have certain limitations?
Well, freedom is a very delicate word. It's very difficult to give a categorical answer to that. I do have much more freedom than I would ever have imagined. When I came here, I did think I would be ending up doing some very literal translations. But there is a lot of room for dialogue and for interpretation, which is absolutely necessary if we're going to communicate. Communication can never just be about putting in a window a series of concepts and ideas and hoping that they will reach the general public. It doesn't work like that. Communication has to be interactive today. And the people who are working in the field of communication, especially the journalists such as yourself, have to be able to make those links between what people are looking for, what they need, what can help them in their lives, information, ideas, hope, encouragement, and also the content, the stuff, the ideas that the church has and the church puts into these wonderful documents. But sometimes it is an issue as how to communicate these great ideas into the living reality. So we have this fluid dialogue which we as communicators have to play our part in.
What you say I relate to very much, being a journalist at Vatican Radio. You're right, I also feel much freer than I thought maybe I would in such an environment. However, we have been going through stormy waters in the past few months, what with the press's coverage, the world press's coverage of the sex abuse scandal in the church. How do you think the Vatican went about that?
Let me say first, I want to take this occasion of World Press Day to thank the press for what they're doing. It is of extreme importance that the press continue to help all the people involved in this situation move forward, especially the victims, to help the victims find support, encouragement, understanding, some kind of opportunity for themselves to grow, to overcome their difficulties, to find ways to forgive. That's a big issue also that's often not mentioned much in the press. So first of all, thanks to the press. We've got to say that as the Vatican. We've got to thank people for what they're doing. We've also got to say, hang on a second, sometimes things are getting a little bit out of proportion. But first of all, the thanks, and then the gentle correction. The whole issue, the whole storm that's been through the media in the last few weeks, months, it's been going on for years. It's only come really into the forefront of the public eye in the last few weeks. It's been going on for years. Our Holy Father, the Pope, especially when he was in the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, has been working hard to tackle this issue. There are countless psychologists working within the church. There are countless formators, educationalists throughout the church working hard on this issue. We've got to thank these people. We've got to put them out there and tell people what is actually going on within the church. It's fine drawing out stories which need to be brought forward from 10, 15, 20 years ago, but we've also got to be balanced. I think in that, as a church, we've struggled to get our good message out in amongst all the bad news, which is getting good coverage, because everybody knows it. Bad news sells newspapers. So we've also got to find within this whole story space to sell the good news as well.
Our aim, Richard pointed out, is really very simple. We've just got to get the message across.
There's no point in having a light and hiding it under the bushel. That's the gospel message. We've got good news. We've got to tell it. That's the job of communicators. That's the job of all the people involved in communications, from those inside the church, but also the, you know, in the church's institution, I mean there, but also the good Catholics and good Christians who are working in the media. They've got to help us, and not just help us, they've got to help themselves. Because very often in all of this controversy at the moment, we're creating an image of church which is co-identified with the Vatican. You know, the church is the Pope, it's the Vatican press office. Yes, that is the church, but the church is also the local parish. The church is also the local parish priest. The church is also the school, the hospital. It's the Catholics on the front line. They're the church. Now, to say, as I said a few moments ago, the church has a message that it's got to get across. This is true, but the church is only going to do that by becoming the message itself. So it's not so much thinking that the church has a message hidden inside a box in Rome as some kind of secretive idea. No, every single member of the church, the whole universal church, has an opportunity here to sell the good news that we have and to be church in selling that.
On the other hand, the church provides an incredible platform for giving news that other news agencies don't care about. You were saying it's the bad news that sells, right? But it's also news about countries that are not within the interests of the public eye. I'm thinking of Zimbabwe, I'm thinking of Burma, I'm thinking of so many countries where there is no press freedom. And working within the Vatican, I have the chance to cover stories that nobody's interested in. And I'm actually endorsed to do so. I'm encouraged to do so. Do you think that's one of our positive aspects?
Yes, that's one of the great things that we've done as the church, one of the great things that Vatican Radio, but also many of the international institutions that are bringing journalists together, are always encouraging us for, is to say, we've got to see the news in a universal context. We can't keep focusing only on London or on Paris or on Rome. That's just a very small corner of the world. And we can't even say, well, let's look over to America. No, let's look to China. Let's look to Australia. Let's look to Africa. There are so many stories out there. And we've got to let those stories be told. And we've got to let those stories be told in the fullness of their story. We can't just offer a Western interpretation of them. And that's a real boon, a real positive experience for us as church, because we come across a way of being human, a way of telling our stories, which is so different but so enriching. We're very quick to denounce some of the effects of globalization, but here's a good thing. Let's listen to some of the stories about forgiveness and friendship that are coming out of war-torn zones around the world, and let's apply that to our family life here in Europe, here in Rome. That's a great thing.
How about language? How important is language in communications? I mean, it's all very well to speak of freedom of the press, but it's got to be comprehensible.
Yeah, again, the journalists have a great and difficult task. They have a great task in that they can get closest to the news, but they also have the difficult task in having to translate that news to the people. I think it's wrong to criticise journalists when they don't quite get it right, and when sometimes there's an oversimplification, or in order to be clear, they sometimes miss out the difficult and complicated bits of the story. They're doing a job, it's a hard job. Let's encourage them and try and help them to do it better. The question of language, there are so many languages around. I mean, in English we think of language, you know, there's English, there's French, there's Italian, there's German. There's that concept of language, you know. Between those languages there are different cultural mindsets. So it's not just a question of literal translation. You've got to get into the thought mentality that's going on behind them and try and just touch on people's values, touch on people's hopes and desires, what they're looking for and what they're understanding and how they're going to interpret and receive and translate and decontextualize words as they become less symbolic and more literal. You know, it's a bit of a philosophical game sometimes, but that's where journalists are working, and they have to do that. There's another concept of language, which is to use different languages. Not to use the written word, but to use the spoken word. Not to use the authoritative, formal word spoken by the hierarchy, but to let a more interactive word reach people, which can be through the social media, through networks and chat. It can be also the word and the language of cinema, or the language of radio programs such as yourself. All of these different languages have to be seen together as a communication strategy, as a communications approach. So just to sort of criticise a written document and say, that's not getting the message across. That's true, but we've got to add in all of the other communication strategies that are being used.
Also because the young generations are more and more used to interacting on a much wider range, as you say, and being interested because of visual stimuli, because of musical stimuli, etc. So would you say that communicators have to keep up with the evolution?
Yes. Not only do communicators have to keep up with the evolution, we also have to accept that today everybody is a communicator. Everybody has the chance to upload videos. Everybody has the chance to write something, add a comment to a newspaper story. So just to say freedom of the press is for journalists, no, we're all involved in this. Today, we are all journalists. We all have something to offer, all have something to provide. In saying that, what really is very important is to come to this issue of how we as church don't just treat news as content, but we remember that in our own actions, we are church. So when you leave a comment in a newspaper article, are you going to act as a Christian in the way you're doing that? Are you doing it with Christian love? Or are you going to be a bad disciple? Are you going to be saying, you know, using the wrong means to get your message across? The message might be good, but you've got to use the right means. You've got to coordinate means and message, form and content. That's what being church is about today in this new communications reality.
And it opens up so many more roads. As you were saying, everybody is a journalist today. Anyone can upload or download, whatever you say, a video on the YouTube. And that makes it ever so more difficult for totalitarian regimes to control the media. So it really brings us all into a realm of responsibility, wouldn't you say?
Yes. I don't want to speak too much about responsibility because I think everybody finds it quite easy to identify the church with teaching responsibility, teaching ethics, teaching morals. So I'll avoid that. But what I would say is pick up on what you were saying about everybody has the chance to upload. Actually, that's not true. There are, as you say, totalitarian states which are blocking out internet providers, blocking out internet connection. Communication can take place in other ways, through mobile phones. Communication take other ways through the press. You know, if we think of press today, we think of, you know, newspapers, but go back to the printing press, that's the way that books were printed. So if you go back and you think of Galileo, what, 400 years ago, using the printing press to distribute his ideas, today ideas are still communicated and ideas will always be communicated. So I think it's a wonderful expression of our humanity that ideas can be circulated. We shouldn't get too excited by the latest means, the latest mechanism, but remember the human person that's behind them and the motivation that pushes people to communicate.
The motivation that pushes people to communicate, the beauty and the sheer energy of ideas, circulating and opening up new perspectives. The importance of means and message, of form and content. Well, Richard Rouse certainly was the right person to talk to on this day, dedicated to freedom of expression and communication. The right person to shine the light on how good journalism can foster reflection and exchange of ideas, on how it can advance empowerment, transparency, accountability, and the fight against corruption, and on how, as Christians, we have the privilege, as well as the duty, to communicate and transmit the Church's good news. And now it's over to my friend, film critic Peter Malone, who heads the film office at Cygnus, the World Catholic Association for Communication. Today he talks about the latest animation film from DreamWorks, which he says should appeal to children of all ages, even if we look like adults.
From DreamWorks comes How to Train Your Dragon. I wasn't actually taken so much by the title, But I'll tell you what, once it started, if there's another Oscar nominee animation film for the rest of the year, it'll have to be very good to beat How to Beat Your Dragon. So I've almost cast my vote, and it's very early in the year.
The film, you say, reminds us of and appeals to the thrillable inner child most adults possess.
Yes, and I think I noticed with the reviewers that female reviewers were responding well to it, as were the males. So it's got something for everyone.
Let's just very quickly give some clues on the plot.
Well, we're up in Scandinavia and on an island of Burk, and it's surrounded by seas, and there are rather large Vikings. I don't know if you're a fan of the cartoons of Hagar the Horrible, but I've used it a lot in my work over the years, so I was absolutely delighted to see the screen equivalents. This time the leader of the island is Stoic the Vast. He's actually voiced by Gerard Butler with his own Scots accent, and he does it very well.
Either we finish them, or they'll finish us.
Everything. But the funny thing is that these ancient Vikings all speak with Scots accents.
You can't lift a hammer, you can't swing an axe, you can't even throw one of these.
But and their children all speak with American accents.
It's okay, Astrid. Toothless.
You're so busted.
Da-da-da, we're dead.
But, that's a concession to Hollywood and the American public, perhaps.
It's filmed in 3D, isn't it?
Yes, it's wonderful 3D. Actually, visually, the recreation of the island and the sea is very impressive. A bit like artwork, perhaps.
This is my home. We have fishing, hunting, and a charming view of the sunsets.
And the dragons, and there are lots and lots of them, especially flying around and attacking the Vikings and nabbing up their poor unsuspecting sheep.
The only problems are the pests. You see, most places have mice or mosquitoes. We have dragons.
The dragons look quite magnificent.
Fighting dragons is everything around here.
It's got an underlying message, hasn't it, Peter?
Well, it has, yes. There's a little boy called Hiccup.
My name's Hiccup.
Which one of the reviewers said probably was the son of Sir Toby Belch, but I let that one go. And he's thin and scrawny.
I've always wanted to be a great Viking.
Oh, no, you don't.
And he doesn't really want to kill dragons. And while he knocks one out of the sky...
Yes, I hit it! I have brought down this mighty beast! Oh.
He finds he's just wounded it a bit, and they become great friends, and in fact, they solve all the mysteries of why the dragons are attacking the Vikings and lead to a happy and harmonious ending.
Thank you for nothing, you useless reptile.
Dragons and humans alike.
So, fighting only gets you so far, right? And perpetrates prejudice. You've got to make friends with your dragon if you want harmony.
Yes, I stole that a bit from Dick Brown and his Hagar the Horrible cartoons, where you are to make friends with your own inner dragon. But it sounds good. It's a witty script. The story is interesting. There's plenty of action for the younger and maybe older audiences. And I thought the way then that it actually works through the relationship of the generations, the father disappointed with his scrawny son and then finding that he really is the hero and leader and works for peace rather than just simply battling, there's a lot to commend it, I would think.
You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.